Hi, everybody. Welcome back. It's the third and final hour of the Pat Miller program for today. Remember, tomorrow at this time, Friday at 5, it'll be the Friday at 5 free-for-all. That's where we can freely pick whatever topic you'd like. You don't have to follow the topics as we lay them out through the program as we do the other days of the week. I want to go to the newsmaker line standing by. We talk to him every Thursday at this time when possible. Third District Congressman Jim Banks. Congressman Banks, a good afternoon to you, sir.
Hey, Pat. Good to be with you.
Let me ask you a couple of questions here. We're going to go several different directions, if that's okay. Was I reading it wrong? Milley and Austin, in their testimony of these senior military leaders, were they trying to say that Biden lied without saying that Biden lied?
Yes. That's exactly what they were saying.
I mean, I kept screaming at the TV, just say it, will you?
Yeah, I mean, they were testifying under oath. They were hedging it. We respect the president. We respect the commander in chief. He's an honorable man. But yes, we told him not to do what he did, and he, without saying it, they were telling us that Joe Biden lied to the American people. In the Stephanopoulos interview, where he said that he was not advised to leave troops in place to prevent the catastrophe in Afghanistan, but he said it other places too. So we now know that either Joe Biden lied to us, or he's just completely not with it when he's in the room with these guys, not listening to them, not able to comprehend or remember important conversations that he has with his top military advisors. Either way, it's not good.
No. In fact, that was the contention I made yesterday, Congressman, because when he was hit with it from Stephanopoulos, and when Joe Biden gets hit with a question from Stephanopoulos and he can't answer it, things are really soft. But he asked him, and he says, your top military advisors warned against withdrawing on this timeline. They wanted you to keep 2,500 troops. And he said, no, they didn't. That wasn't true. Well, Stephanopoulos went back around and had done some homework and said, they said, no, they said you should keep 2,500. And that's when Biden said, no one said that to me that I can recall. One of two problems here. One of three problems here. Either he's lying,
right,
the generals are lying, or Biden is having a slippage of the brain greater than what we had supposed.
Yeah, all around it's a bad situation. I mean, they also sort of hedged their answers about why we gave up Bagram instead of using that as a strategic location to evacuate Americans and others out of the country. They said it was because Biden ordered them to withdraw troops, but take troops to the embassy to protect the embassy. None of it added up. I mean, it was an interesting 2 days of testimony before the Senate, before our House committee yesterday. Overall, we now know that Joe Biden either lied to us or he's not with it.
Okay, after listening to the 2 days and hearing what it was that these generals said, and a lot of people aren't thrilled with Milley or Austin anyway, but to hear what they said, are we to the point that we have allowed those who are military but serve alongside our political arm of this country, the president, the vice president, Congress, people like Milley and Austin, have we allowed their positioning to become too political, to where they can't really function like generals or speaking from a true military perspective? I mean, I've got the funny feeling that after they left there and they got in their car to go back to their office, that Milley and Austin looked at each other and goes, I can't believe we had to say that crap.
Yeah, that, or they were relieved that they're never going to be fully held accountable for becoming, one, very political, making the military political. I mean, these woke political generals have done more damage to the institution, the civilian control of our military, than any generals that I can think of in history. I mean, maybe Douglas MacArthur was a political general, but at least he knew how to win a war. I mean,
yeah,
these guys have lost every war that they've been a part of. So there's a big difference there. But then that was the basis of my back and forth with General Milley, was you go spill your guts to political reporters and book authors about politics, and you can't with a straight face tell us that the military is apolitical and non-political, and tell us that you're a non-political figure. You can't have it both ways.
Or that you got interviewed for a book like that and you haven't even read any part of it.
Right. Yeah. Right. And he was disputing parts of the book, but he knows that Bob Woodward probably recorded his conversations, so he can't get too far out there on a limb, because Bob Woodward will produce the tape of the recording and prove that that what General Milley told him is what's in the book. So he's afraid of that. And there are some very dangerous comments that he made in the book, not just about his call with his Chinese counterpart, but when he calls conservatives domestic terrorist and uses other highly charged political language about half of the American people. I mean, these are dangerous comments that should never come out of the mouth of anyone in uniform, but especially the top military officer in our country, which is General Milley.
Now you are a blend of both, military and political. You've served in both capacities. What would possess somebody like a Milley to sit down with a Bob Woodward in the first place? I mean, why would you even do that?
I'm not sure that that's ever happened before. I mean, General Dunford, the good thing about General Dunford, who preceded General Milley, is that most people have never heard of him. That's the way that it should be. I mean, General Milley is a household name because he's become so political in his role. And what motivated him to sit down with Bob Woodward, I think it was twofold. I think he wanted to settle scores with the commander-in-chief, who, by the way, gave him his job. I mean, in the book talks at length about how General Milley undermined him, and I think, you know, General Milley wanted to take some shots at President Trump and speak with these book authors to do it. But secondly, I think he cares way too much about his image. I mean, he's carefully crafting his image with these political reporters and these authors. And if you look at I bought the book, I've read it. If you look at the index, General Milley is a key character throughout the entire book, from cover to cover. General Milley is as much of a significant figure in this new book, Peril, as President Trump or anyone else that's in the book. It's all about General Milley. It's disgusting.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this. Were you President Biden? Okay. I realize that's a stretch for you. But let's say you're President Biden, and you're saying, I don't recall these guys ever saying anything to me about any of this, and they go and testify on Capitol Hill. Wouldn't a president that's worth his salt, if he believes his word is true, wouldn't these guys be gone?
Let me give you a better example. When General Stanley McChrystal spoke out publicly, he actually did an interview with an author, and he didn't know that it was on the record, but then it was published, and spoke out and disagreed with his commander-in-chief, which was President Obama, and at the time he was criticizing Vice President Biden. President Obama fired him on the spot, and that was probably the right thing in that moment to do. For if a general was speaking out about politics and disagreeing with the commander in chief, he relieved him from his post. That's what President Obama did. President Biden is doing just the opposite. He's saying, I stand behind General Milley. He's defending General Milley. I'm not sure that he knows exactly what or who he's defending, but he's defending him because General Milley is an anti-Trump, anti-Republican general.
Right.
That's
right.
Why he's defending him.
So, which just further politicizes the military.
Yes, which General Milley told me in our back and forth. He says it's dangerous when the military becomes political, and that's exactly why. I don't know how any commander-in-chief or secretary of defense could trust a general and the top general in the entire military, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, to be a political advisor on all military matters if that general is out talking about politics and beating up on the former commander-in-chief, disagreeing with the current commander-in-chief. It's a dangerous precedent.
Let me do this. Let me change channels with you for just a moment, sir, because I know there's been a lot of chatter going on, things about the House Republicans who voted for the red flag laws in the NDAA bill, NDAA National Defense Authorization Act. And you are one of them listed as one who, in fact, voted for it. Are you, in fact, voting for them to be able to come in and start peeling away our guns?
Well, first of all, the National Defense Authorization Act is the single bill that we pass every year to support our troops and support our military. And you know, Pat, I'm never going to vote against our troops. And there are a lot of provisions in this bill that we pass every single year that support our troops, that position us better to take on our greatest adversary, and that being China. That a lot of provisions that I effectively got into this bill, but this bill hasn't passed yet. It's going to a conference committee, and in the conference committee, just like last year, we will successfully remove the dangerous red flag laws because I'm actually a conferee because I'm a leader on the committee, so I get to go to this conference committee, and I'm not going to sign my name to the conference report until we scrub out the red flag law language, which the Democrats slipped in the House committee, just like they did last year. So will, I can guarantee you, your listeners of this show, I have the top rating in the entire state of Indiana with Gun Owners of America, a top rating with the NRA. I've always supported the Second Amendment. And I've had a lot of phone calls about this because it's being unfairly represented. This bill hasn't passed yet, and we're going to get the red flag law language out of it, just like we got it out last year. And at this point, even the Democrat leaders of the committee have given us their agreement that they will take it out because they know they can't pass the bill with our support if they keep it in.
Yeah, I mean, when I saw this, I knew what was going on because every year they try to slip something into it. And what you voted for was not, and people, you need to understand this, and I realize it sounds like a song and dance and the Washington, D.C. two-step, but this is how this works. The bill's there. It's coming down the pike, supporting the troops, make sure we have provisions, make sure we take care of our veterans. It's all in there. And then some Democrat somewhere slips something in. This time, it's the red flag laws. And so in your vote, you are not voting to say, this is the bill we want. You're voting that it goes forward because when it gets to the committee, that's when all this nonsense can get gutted out.
Yeah, it's a messy process, but this is what Democrats do, Pat. I mean, what you're describing, this is what the Democrats will continue to do when they're in power. They'll try to pull fast moves like this and pass their radical agenda and use a bill like the bill to support our military to pass their radical agenda. But there are a couple of other things in the bill that are really important to me. We succeeded in getting language in the bill that says that you can't dishonorably discharge any member of our military for not taking the COVID-19 vaccination. That's really important to me. And we also got language in the bill this year that will continue to allow for, actually, it will allow for more National Guard resources to go down to the border and address the dangerous situation that's going on there. It's getting worse by the day. And then on top of that, a lot of other provisions that I fought for that support a lot of our local defense contractors and employers in the area who do really important things to help our national security and at the end of the day to support our troops.
Well, I will tell you, if you recall, this is the week I should have been in Washington, D.C. I should have been there for the Hold Their Feet to the Fire radio event with FAIR. And because of upcoming surgery and all that, not able to travel right now. So what I'm going to do is tonight I'm going to go home, and Kim is making a very special chicken dinner for us for tonight. So I'm going to pretend you and I are in the Dubliner restaurant there in the hotel having the world-famous chicken pot pie. It's not quite the same, but it's as close as I can get. Let's hope that next time.
FaceTime me.
What's that?
FaceTime me.
Yeah, because I know you want that watching me eat. Well, listen, let's hope next year I'm actually there because it's a conference that I always love. And when you're talking about things relative to immigration and you're there at FAIR, it's a great conference. They're a great organization. Congressman, thanks for your time today. Hang in there. Keep drilling and working. And we support you every way we can. I know your heart. And that's why when I started getting things from people about red flag laws, look what Jim voted for. You have to understand the process. You just have to understand the process. And if you can't, then it makes life pretty difficult. Congressman Banks, thank you for today, sir. And we look forward to talking to you again next week.
Thank you, Pat. Have a good day.
Podcasts by Federated Media.